You're a SaaS founder. You've built something solid, but growth still feels harder than it should. Most SaaS companies don't fail because of bad tech. They fail because they've never become a must-have to the right customer. This podcast is here to change that. I'm Ton Dobbe, and this is the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. Every week, I talk to founders in the trenches, facing friction, making bold moves, and building companies that last. We dig into real choices around focus, positioning, customer pool, team alignment, the things that separate forgettable software from the ones that people can't live without. No hype, no hacks, just honest conversations to help you build something that people would miss if it was gone. If your SaaS should be indispensable but isn't yet, this is your podcast. Let's get into it. The guest on my podcast this week is Hikari Senju, CEO of OmniKey.
You can hustle and you can fake it till you make it only so far, but it's going to catch up to you. If you want to build, and if you're serious about building a generation defining company, building a company that really has impact, then you have to focus on the basics. And it's usually not just one hack or one thing. It's usually a million small things that you've assembled together in a way that works perfectly, you know, as a system that is hard to replicate by a competitor because it's built off all these teeny, differentiations you've done because you've just thought way more deeply about this problem for a longer period of time.
This is Hikari. We dig into how we build real customer value while competitors rush features to market. You'll hear how his grow slow, grow real philosophy shaped his approach to building complete systems, and why focusing on what customers actually value beats chasing what impresses other founders. We explore the differences between building something that works versus building something that sounds clever. Well, hi, Hikari. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Thank you, Todd.
It's a pleasure to get you here. When I was getting the introduction to you and the question whether this would fit, I was like, yep, this would fit. It's about B2B software. It's about, you know, the latest with regards to using AI. And yeah, I found a number of angles in your leadership style and your approach that really resonated with me to have this conversation. So I was looking forward to this. Before we start talking about your company, OmniKey, a little bit about you. What drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
I'm a very competitive person. I like winning. I like proving myself. I think growing up, definitely there's that kind of immigrant hunger as well. I grew up in the United States, but my parents are from Japan. And so you definitely have this desire to prove yourself, I think. So I was a competitive fencer in high school and in college. And then also, at a young age doing like robotics competitions and even in the Bay doing hackathons and host hackathons and we sponsor hackathons. So there's that kind of innate competitiveness. I think the other thing is the desire to make a positive impact with our product and our technology. I think there's this idea that being an entrepreneur, it's really an act of service, right? Because as you know, I think you know, the chance of being, a successful, having like, a $1 trillion company success is low. You definitely, believe that you can get there. But regardless, on a risk-adjusted basis, there has to be another motivation than just that you want to build a $1 trillion business. There has to be passion of servicing your customer, of a deep passion in the technology that you're building, so that even if you weren't making any money, and for the first couple of years when we were bootstrapped, we were making no money, there's that innate curiosity and desire to build products for others and to serve others that keeps you driving forward. For me, it's generative AI and building generative AI products for marketers and for other entrepreneurs and businesses that has been the driving desire to democratize growth and make growth more accessible to more businesses and more people all over the world, to make it easier for entrepreneurs to connect with the customers. And then this deep passion I have in generative AI, which really stems from from college when I studied computer science at Harvard, focusing on AI and machine learning, but also because my dad's an artist. And so the idea of an AI generating art and being creative, I found incredibly exciting. And so it's, those kind of passions also, I think, are very important in terms of, you know, for me at least, in terms of what's what drives me as well. So deep passion in the technology, deep passion in servicing others with this technology. And then, yeah, just the innate competitiveness to be the very best, to be the very best at that.
Yeah, I mean, I can only applaud for that. And some people always think, yeah, I mean, we need to be the best. And that it resonates in a different way, or maybe in the wrong way. You don't have to be the best. As long as you're the best for a certain group whereby you deliver value that others cannot easily copy.
Exactly, exactly. You definitely can't be the best at everything at, from the get-go. You have to focus on, because there's too many incumbents and big companies with deeper pockets than you. The advantage that a startup has is, you know, focus, it's energy, it's speed, it's, you know, a highly mission-oriented team focusing, you know, just delivering a, you know, much higher productivity really than at a bigger company. And so that has to be channeled in a very specific area, potentially like a weakness in the market really, and kind of a soft opening in the market that if you feel like you're really focused at that particular moment there, you can kind of break through and create like a product that makes an impact. And so, it means how you have to say no to a lot of things, and saying no is hard because I think, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're always going, you know, you're trying to get yeses, right? I mean, it's really hard, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're selling to investors, you're selling to customers, you're selling to your team, and so you're always striving for the yes. But as an entrepreneur yourself, you have to be very selective in terms of where you focus your resources. And so, I think focus, you know, and the knowledge you can't please everyone, I think, is one of the most important things.
There's a couple of things that I want to hone in on, because like you mentioned the word focus already about four or five times now. And focus at the end is trait number 7 in my book, The Remarkable Effect. You know, the remarkable software companies master the art of focusing on the essence. Let's zoom in on that a little bit later. But I think it's first important for, you already highlighted what your company is doing or in what space it is, generative AI for marketing teams and so on. But you highlighted a point like the weakness in the market. What was that weakness in the market that you saw back in 2018 that was screaming for a solution and you decided?
Yeah. And this has really been our MO since we started the company, which is data-driven creative. That the content creation process has been, for lack of a better word, just not intelligent. Like we focus, and we brand ourselves as smart creative, as intelligent creative. The idea that the creative should know more about, you know, creative does, you know, the marketing team does know a lot about you. They're definitely, at least maybe not the team, but the system does. There's a lot of data about the user, and there is even more data every day about the user. And so the creative should be intelligent, the content should be intelligent, personalized for that individual at that particular moment in time for that particular company and for where the kind of the meeting is happening. And so, you know, whether that's a, you know, certain social platform or different social platform or television or some other platform. And so the lack of intelligent creatives was kind of the big impetus behind starting Omniki back in 2018. And I think then that the opportunity was in Gen AI, that historically it was really difficult to craft smart content, to craft intelligent personalized content, just because most marketing teams are highly constrained in terms of designers. You know, you can only create so many ads and so many pieces of marketing content, you know, in a day. But with Gen AI, you could solve this problem of having more intelligent content. And so that was really the opportunity, was the lack of intelligent content, as well as the opportunity for providing this with this newfound technology that was Gen AI, and which, you know, had started in, oh, had started studying in college. And so those two, the problem and the solution kind of meeting and saying, okay, well, this is the problem I want to go after. It's a really age-old problem. I mean, marketers say that more than 50% of my marketing budget is wasted, and it's wasted on ineffective content. I mean, I think, you know, we've all experienced the issue where we're seeing the same irrelevant ad over and over and over again. You know, it causes ad fatigue, it destroys brand value, it destroys conversion rates. Consumers who see the same ad more than four times decrease conversion rates by 50%. And so it's actually, you're literally burning your marketing dollars on fire by not having intelligent content. And that's what I saw when I was running marketing at the company that I acquired, my previous company. And kind of more broadly across the marketing ecosystem. And so this was therefore the problem that went inside to go about solving back in 2018.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you think is the major problem behind the fact that there are so many irrelevant ads?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, first of all, attention span, like the competition for attention is getting fiercer and fiercer and fiercer. The average attention span for a piece of video content, for example, is about 1.3 seconds. And partly this is because Gen AI and AI makes content creation even easier. And so there's going to be more content because more people can produce good content. It's never been easier to create a video or an image. And so therefore, the consumer attention span is shrinking. So therefore, to find and create content that breaks through that noise is harder. And so I think there's general advancement technology that's resulting in more competition for attention. You're competing against games and apps and all these other things. And somehow you need to have someone stop in the middle of their day and be like, huh, let me learn more about this product. And so that's, never been harder. And I think the other bandwidth issue has just been, again, just like not being able to create enough personalized content. Historically, I think you're competing against these really compelling UGC, user-generated content. And I think it's actually been shown now that user-generated content attracts more marketing dollars than traditional content now, or like kind of, from a media company.
Yeah.
Due to the rise of these social platforms and such. And so therefore, user-generated content, there's a lot of them because it's people made it for free and people distribute it across their followers. And so there's the dot bar is high in terms of when you're trying to have someone stop watching that and go and click your ad. And so therefore, when a marketing team is competing against the highest quality user-generated content, the marketing team also has to step up. And so therefore, I think there's always been this disjoint where a consumer is looking at this rich feed of really compelling user-generated content, which is, the top 0.1% of, the billions of pieces of content that are being produced every day. And then the ad now has bought that slot and needs to convince the person to stop scrolling and click that ad. And that disjoint also creates a sense that an ad is irrelevant or annoying or not personalized sufficiently. And I think it just goes to show the richness of the user-generated content space. And so, it's therefore more critical that a marketing team level up their game to produce content that can break through that noise and stop someone from scrolling and click on that ad.
Completely agree. It's the noise. Now, kind of tying that, because what you do for your customers at the end is also something that you have to break through. I mean, starting in the generative AI space, that's a decision in itself. Then it's kind of making the decision to start in the growth space, the marketing automation arena. That's another big choice. I mean, what have you done from the start to give yourself an advantage to rise above the noise?
Well, the strategy has been that to focus on the end user, to focus on the application. And the thesis was that as Gen AI improves, this application will get more and more superpowered to the point now where anybody, any of your listeners can sign up, free trial, generate really beautiful ads within seconds and launch them within a minute of signing up. I think the decision to start in Gen AI, number one, was I thought it was like the most, revolutionary technology that was happening, even back when I was studying in college about it. I mean, people were talking about AI, but I think, when I saw AI generating art, and when I thought, growing up the son of an artist, where you thought that like art is the essence of communication, that it's the essence of, in some ways it's the pinnacle of creativity. And it's like, if an AI can do that well, if an AI can generate art well, if an AI can build a piece of content that resonates with a person as deeply as the best artworks do, then that is a revolutionary technology in you know, in human society than really almost anything that preceded it, I thought. And so that's really what got me excited about generative AI, was in college seeing it generating art and being like, wow, that's really, this really kind of touches on what it means to be human in some ways, to communicate, mm-hmm. To tell stories that resonate with people. And if an AI seems like it's on track to be able to do this well, then like, what does it mean to be human and all these? And so the power of that technology really kind of resonated with me in college. And partly, I think this is being the, you know, growing up the son of an artist. I think the other thing is also that I have an intuition of Moore's Law. So my grandfather worked at IBM. I grew up in New York near the IBM headquarters. And so from a young age, I had this kind of intuition of like the exponential rate in which technology improves, and like kind of awed by the yeah. power. I would go, you know, on my, when I was a kid, on summers outside of like kind of robotics competitions and all this, I would go with my grandfather and go see demos, because he became a VC afterwards, and, you know, to all these different startups and these labs, and seeing kind of the really kind of amazing technologies that were being in development. And then just being, you know, and then also just my grandfather, I really distinctly remember as a kid being like, you know, every 6 months, the world changes. And this is, you know, this is a guy that grew up, you know, at least his business career was through the PC era in like the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then before that, the microcomputer era. And so even then he was saying, you know, the world changes every 6 months. Now it feels like the world changes potentially faster than every 6 months. And so like having an intuition of Moore's Law and exponential rate in which technology improves, and then seeing generative art, I felt like this is one of the most exciting things I want to get really involved in. I think in terms of advertising, getting involved in advertising, I think for me it was, you know, and I think it's very obvious now, and I think it was very obvious even then, is that like, clearly if you can generate art, advertising is one of the most, in some ways, obvious areas in which this gets, you know, this disrupts first. Advertising has historically been at the very cutting edge of innovative technology. You know, the first websites were powered by, you know, after it was funded by governments, and you know, it was funded by advertisers. The first banner ads were kind of what fueled the internet, the first, you know, era of the internet. And so, and so advertising has always been kind of forward leaning in terms of technology. But also, I think advertising and art have always been operating at an intersection. So, you have, you know, Andy Warhol and the Campbell soup ads and with the silk screens. And you know, was that an ad? Was that a piece of artwork? You know, what does it mean to be in a, you know, a symbol? What does it mean to be a commercial symbol? What does it mean? You know, what does being commercial even mean, right? In terms of, and that was kind of the whole conversation around Andy Warhol. And so ads and arts had always been kind of inspiring, and had this kind of duality to it where they're feeding you off each other. And so also, you know, therefore, like if you can generate art, advertising immediately gets impacted. That's, you know, kind of intuiting that as well. And also my dad was making money on the side, making ads as well. And so I think just immediately seeing the kind of financial applications there kind of was what drew me to ads. And then I think the other big thing was just running ads. Like I was running marketing growth at the company that acquired my previous company, running ads, running Google ads, creating the ads, optimizing those campaigns, and seeing the impact that a good creative has, seeing the data that you have for each creative, and then seeing an opportunity to create more intelligent content. Those were probably some of the forces that got me to start in those two areas.
So one of the things that I read about you is your philosophy around democratizing technology. You know, that AI is a great equalizer, enabling businesses of all sizes to compete at a level playing field with other big companies. And I think that's completely true. That said, you know, it's still an area that's extremely busy and extremely noisy. One of the things, and we talked about it a little bit before we started, one of the traits in my book is about aim to be different, not just better. The other one is acknowledge you cannot please everyone. Let's first zoom into the first one, acknowledge you cannot please everybody. With your technology, I mean, technically you could say it can be used by everybody creating an ad. But are there, in your go-to-market, have you made choices to go for particular areas of the market, particular verticals, particular use cases, where your technology just provide a way bigger value?
Yeah. So first, I definitely believe that technology is democratized. I think the arc of technological innovation is democratized. It's about empowering more people with powers that, you know, only the people with the most resources have. And so there is that Oregon. And it's deep passion of empowering more people with technology. But it is also just, you know, a force on and of itself. Regarding the need to focus, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this was the first couple of years. There was a lot of testing of different audiences. There was a lot of, you know, and I think you can see this in terms of our revenue growth is, you know, it's like, is this our ICP? Is that our ICP? You know, who's our customer? And I think the strand that we're seeing, and really, especially, you know, this past month, we grew new signups 4x, revenues growing, you know, commensurately. And again, it's going to grow at a similar magnitude again this month. And that's correct. What we're seeing is, you know, we're here to all through the alliance with this mission of democratizing growth. Our ICPs are other startups and challenger brands. It is the companies that are under-resourced, have our lean teams and are looking to quickly scale their ads to connect with their customers. And so if you are a challenger brand, you're a challenger e-commerce company, you're a fintech company, you're a crypto company, you're a SaaS company, you know, those are the customers that have historically fueled their revenue and continue to fuel their revenue. And now with this self-serve tool, which, you know, starts at just $99 a month with a free trial, companies in those industries at even an earlier stage can start using our tool and finding value and scaling their ads. And so focusing on, you know, and also in some ways that is the customer base that I understand best, you know, being in Silicon Valley, being a serial entrepreneur, you know, I understand the challenges of being a founder and, you know, with constrained resources and trying to connect and, you know, break through in terms of marketing and brand recognition in an increasingly competitive world in terms of attention. And so that is our ICP.
I saw your post on LinkedIn that this is what I call the hockey stick of on the
yeah, exactly. Well, and that hockey stick actually has, you know, that was only, you know, at the middle of the month. And so actually it was like, you know, several order of magnitudes much higher than that, than the month. And then now obviously we're seeing the other, you know, charts hockey stick in a similar way, including revenue and, you know, net revenue expansion and, you know, like conversion rates, resell rates. And so that's just really exciting.
Good to hear. Good to see. The funny thing was, I mean, I studied the hockey stick. It was sort of a flat, well, of course, compared to the hockey stick line from 2019 all the way to 2025. That is 6 years down the road. And then suddenly it's May and it does this. What was the thing that you believe made the hockey stick happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's like, people talk about overnight successes, but overnight successes are many years in the making.
Exactly.
And I think most companies, you know, most technologies take a long time to incubate and scale. And so, for example, you know, even like a product like the cloud, right? I mean, you know, I was just listening to an interview recently with Steve Ballmer from Microsoft, and he was saying that he was working on the cloud since 2005. It didn't really take off until the 2010s. And so that's, you know, 6, 7, 8 years just in the wilderness, you know, building this infrastructure so that now it's their primary growth engine. And so, you know, and it's $1 trillion opportunity or, you know, already product. And so, you know, the reality is like that hockey stick is just, I think, you know, par for the course of an entrepreneur and building a product. Now, not many companies survive that hockey stick wilderness era. And I think this is where being capital efficient and being intelligent with the allocation of resources, being lucky with having supportive investors through this journey, being lucky with the team you have that is, you know, believes in the mission and believes in what you're building and working on these iterations day after day and working at high intensity for a long period of time, because it's not easy to keep, you know, working at high intensity for many years like that. And for us, I think it's really, you know, going back to this strategy that I laid out from day one, which is we're going to build the application. And as the technology advances, we're going to swap out components of the technology to the latest and greatest generative models. And I think what happened earlier this year is that we had truly a step change in terms of the ability of AI to generate content. Until earlier this year, you could kind of tell the difference between what was an AI-generated content and human-generated content. AI wasn't very good at doing words, for example, on images. AI wasn't very good at generating things like fingers and people. And then there was just a step change earlier this year where it's fixed all, it solved all the, it did, those issues just are fairly rare now.
Exactly.
And that's when our product started to work really well, because that's the product we have been building towards.
Yeah.
But you know, if the ad isn't generating ads to a certain level of completion and perfection, advertisers aren't interested in using, you know, they're not interested in launching ads where the fingers are six and the words are misspelled. But the moment, that the AI is now able to generate where, you know, you cannot differentiate, you know, whether there's an AI human or a real human, and where the words are generated perfectly, image, suddenly the product works in a way that it never did before. Exactly. And so for us, it was also just building to the, you know, we knew the hockey stick would get here, and then finally the hockey stick arrived and we were in position to ride this wave and fully integrate this technology into our tool. And you know, throughout this time, we had been building the best analytics product. We had built the best workflow tool for marketers to ideate and analyze and make sure there's brand safety and make sure that you're having proper approvals and compliance, and then launching those ads across all the different platforms. You know, we'll build an AI team in Silicon Valley that could integrate the latest and greatest Gen AI models in the most fastest and cost-effective ways into our tool. And then we had a marketing team and a brand that when we released this product, self-serve, that was, you know, we had, there was demand from users just to try this tool. And then when they tried it, they could see the value. They could see that the quality, and I genuinely believe this, and I think anybody who uses our tool today can see it for themselves and, again, try it for free. Our, the content we generate on our platform is just 10 times better than the content that you can generate on competitors. And because, you know, we've trained our model and we have tens of thousands of reference ads that are the best designs that we've trained the models on. We understand for every single industry and category, what are the best type of performing ads? What are the best performing designs? I myself have a design aesthetic orientation where I'm, you know, a lot of these other competitors are started by growth hackers and data analysts and data types, but they don't have that aesthetic orientation regarding what makes something beautiful, what is good design, what is good effective minimalism, what is, you know, what is clean design, you know, a lot of, you know, but you don't see that necessarily with the, our competitor tools. And so
I completely agree with you. And it's, well, I think it is going, so we started with acknowledge you cannot please everybody. And you started talking about your ICP, who's the best type of user for that. But it is also very much in connection what you do to trade number seven, which is focus on the essence. And that has so many different flavors. Focus on the essence in this case is also, you're doing the hard things. Like you said, there's so many companies and people out there that start and then do the minimum viable product, the hacking, whereby real momentum and real traction comes from people seeing, okay, this is something that stands out.
I think, you know, there was this really great quote from a BCA, you know, right when I was starting, and he was like, grow slow, grow real. Like, you know, like, that's the strategy. That is actually the winning strategy for an entrepreneur, is to grow slow and to grow real, to build something real that drives real value for customers. You can hustle and you can fake it till you make it only so far, but it's going to catch up to you. And it helps, it definitely does. And also, if you build a company off weak foundations, based on something that's not real, based on something that was slapdash, maybe, you know, you got lucky and you get in some traction, you were able to raise enough capital off that, and you're building on a very shaky foundation.
Yeah.
Those companies do not become the generation-defining companies of the future. Those companies usually tend to implode at some point of the stage just because the foundations are not strong. And so if you want to build, and if you're serious about building a generation-defining company, building a company that really has impact, then you have to focus on the basics. You have to focus on actually creating a product that is valuable and drives value for customers. And you have to do the hard things. And that's, you know, which is, you know, actually building a product that is better. And it's usually not just one hack or one thing. It's usually a million small things that you've assembled together in a way that that works perfectly, you know, as a system that is hard to replicate by a competitor because it's built off all these teeny, you know, differentiations you've done because you've just thought way more deeply about this problem for a longer period of time. And you've also built a team that understands this problem way more deeply than, you know, a team that's kind of, you know, hustled together, you know, very quickly. And so, you know, build real, I think, you know, grow real, grow slow if necessary. And then if you are successful doing that, then you will build value because...
customers will notice. Let me make a small interruption here. Hikari just made an excellent remark about why shortcuts eventually destroy companies. The build real principle shaped his decision to focus on customer value, while competitors decided to chase shortcuts. Most founders optimize for what sounds impressive to investors or other founders, but customers pay for outcomes, not features. And this is what remarkable software companies master. First, they acknowledge they cannot please everyone. Next, they master the art of curiosity. And with the insights, they build new value possibilities. Want to master these traits as well? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview. Well, this is the whole premise about my book. You know, it's called The Remarkable Effect for a reason. It's all the things that you just highlighted, the foundational strength of the business, the basics right, building something that's perceived as valuable, and I actually add desirable to it as well. And I think what you do makes it not only valuable for people because it generates revenue, but it's also desirable because it just puts them in such a good daylight because they create something beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. And I think understanding the metrics that your customers care about is also very important. Yeah. You know, for us, it's about return on ad spend. So customers focus on delivering higher return on ad spend. And if you can deliver high return on ad spend, then you can beat anyone. If our product delivers higher return on ad spend than Google or Meta or Microsoft, then you can compete with those companies because advertisers will ultimately go to the product that delivers higher return on ad spend. You're seeing this play out with, you know, for example, a company like AppLovin, which has created a $135 billion market cap company just because they deliver superior return on ad spend because of their focus on mobile advertisers. And, you know, I think that company also fits all the different descriptions that we're describing very well. But focusing on a customer, delivering superior return on ad spend, and then executing that over a long period of time. But, you know, in different industries, maybe a different metric. Maybe it's comfort, maybe it's speed, maybe it's, you know, price. But yeah, like for us, it's been, you know, everything we've built in design is around, you know, does our analytics actually deliver superior return on ad spend for our customers? Do our creatives deliver superior return on ad spend for our customers? Does our approach of generating bulk creative and launching bulk creative across these platforms, launching thousands of ads and then managing thousands of ads and building a system for managing thousands of ads because it's not, you know, intuitive how you manage thousands of ads, does that deliver superior return on ad spend? It's always been focused around that outcome that we're delivering for customers. And if you can deliver that outcome, then you can compete with the biggest companies because that's what customers really care about. At the end of the day, you know, like even if you're competing with a company with a great brand, if you're delivering a better outcome, you know, and if it's obvious that you're delivering a better outcome, customers will go to the product that delivers the better outcome, not necessarily the company that has the bigger brand.
Exactly. Well said. And that is completely true. That is about focusing on the essence. It is about creating fans, not just customers. It's about, well, you said, I mean, building a better product, and you also mentioned like 10x better, but how you've gone about it has created something whereby you solve the problem that they have, which is return on ad spend. You solve it in a different way than others can. So even if others improve little things, they couldn't get to that leap that you're creating because it's a system.
It's a million different things that work together perfectly in combination, but it's also a system that is in some ways anti-fragile because it's been built to ride this Gen AI wave. And so, you know, our focus, like Gen AI doesn't care about return on ad spend. Gen AI doesn't really care about advertisers or advertising, but we do. And so we built this machine, which is our company, which is focused on translating latest and greatest Gen AI into the best application for delivering superior return on ad spend for advertisers. And that, I think, is a differentiation and a competitive differentiation for us versus some of these companies that are just getting started off or some of our competitors.
you're solving a real problem. You know, it's not like you can, I can also create a cool looking picture. Well, fine, fun, but that's not the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, people think an ad is just an image. And maybe that may be true to the extent in which that, like, the experience most people have an ad is that of an image. But an ad is actually a system for targeting, delivering, and buying in an ROI positive way, and also generating that ad to deliver a business outcome for a customer. That's what an ad is. It's not
Exactly.
just the ad is the creative is just the pinnacle on the top of the larger iceberg of the larger infrastructure that's required to deliver that ad in an effective way to you at that right moment in time to convince you to click on it. And you have to build that whole system. Just because you generate an image does not mean you're generating an ad. Just because you're generating some image that looks like an ad does not mean you're generating an ad. An ad is, you know, there's a whole infrastructure under the water that you don't really see that also constitutes that ad.
Exactly. Fascinating. Well, I mean, I've seen that the energy in this conversation has gone up and up and up. Looking at the time, one more question. What, from your entrepreneurial journey, and yeah, you've worked with early ventures, also with Quick Help, for example, I saw OmniKey in 2018. What would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with other aspiring tech entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's never, you know, it's never been a better time to be an entrepreneur because there are so many tools available to be an entrepreneur. And I think probably the future will have more entrepreneurs as more and more things, you know, the kind of repetitive tasks become automated. So I think the alpha that humans have is ultimately taking risks, being creative, and creating, you know, unique value for other humans. But yeah, I think it really does go back to this kind of MO, which is, you know, grow real, you know, and if grow slow, if necessary, I think, you know, solve real problems with a real product that is actually superior, you know, in a number of differentiated ways, because the way, you know, you've just built the product better because of some novel insight, and usually not just one novel insight, but, you know, a stacking of novel insights that they, you know, kind of give you a unique advantage. I think, you know, it's a lot of what, you know, you've laid out in your book as well, right? I mean, focus on the customer, focus on the metric that customer cares about, focus on, you know, delivering consistently that value to that customer. You know, that focus is also going to be your differentiation. But if there are other competitors in the space, then find, well, what is it additionally that you bring that makes your product more novel? And then, you know, people will recognize the unique value of creating and what you're trying to do, and they'll become fans, and then they'll support you on your journey. And so you also therefore have to tell a story and communicate a story well to get those supporters as you go and, you know, try and achieve this mission, which is, you know, usually something larger than just making money. It has to be like democratizing growth.
Thanks.
For us, yeah. Our mission, you know, whatever it is your mission is, you know, it is also important to have a mission that is, you know, bigger than yourself, and then, you know, you'll and then also stay true to it, you know, because people can tell when it's not real.
Exactly. Yeah, well said. Yeah, the mission bigger than yourself, because it's about a change in the market. Well, where can people go to find out more about OmniKey or to say hi to you?
Well, you can email me at hi@omnikey.com. It used to be the supporting email, then it just became my main email. And then omnikey.com is our website. You can try out for a free trial. And then you can follow us on LinkedIn, on X, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. See all our content we're producing and sharing their regular updates about our company.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much.
Colin, thank you so much. Thank you.
And this wraps up my conversation with Hikari Senju, CEO of OmniKey. If you got value from this episode, please share it with other SaaS founders who need to hear this as well. And if you got 10 seconds, a quick rating or review on Apple Podcasts will help more people to find these conversations. Thank you for listening to the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. If you want more insights like this, subscribe to my daily email, Espresso with Ton. It's a 2-minute shot of clarity for SaaS founders who want to create pull, not push. You can sign up, along with getting my book, at valueinspiration.com. See you in the next episode.